Scott likes using GIFs the most. Adam loves ERA and auto-tunes himself this way. Paxton's regression screams, Brooklyn's got a winning team. Liam Hendricks, Brad Hand, Mike Trout plays near Disneyland. Stats from spring training, daily play. Is it raining? What's the ceiling? Bank on ceiling, can I get up?
Today on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, we are going to talk about Matt Carpenter and when to draft him next year when he will be 33 years old. Defying baseball odds. We'll also tell you why Ronald Acuna has a 66% chance of getting into the Hall of Fame and much more. Your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Welcome, everybody. I've got a new nickname for the two guys that are on the show today. If you win a league, do you know what your new nickname would be? No, you don't, right? No. You'd be Assassin's Creed.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot, Adam. Very good name.
Thank you.
You sound like you have all of your facilities and have gotten plenty of sleep.
No, I haven't. I haven't gotten a lot of sleep, but that's okay. I watched some baseball last night. I thought I heard them say on the broadcast that Luis Severino was tipping his pitches on ESPN. I could have sworn I heard them say that, but I kept trying to read about it this morning and didn't see anything saying that he was tipping his pitches, so I don't know, but we obviously are going to talk about that. In fact, let's start with our email of the day from Joe at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Subject line, Severino needs an opener. Come on, Aaron Boone. And yeah, he's having some first inning struggles, but he's having more than that. Last seven starts, Severino has a 750 ERA. He has an 11% swinging strike rate, and he's given up 11 home runs. And he faces the Blue Jays this weekend. What are you guys feeling about Luis Severino right now?
Sad. Confusion.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I would expect from Assassin's Creed. Sad confusion. What about starting him this weekend against the Blue Jays?
I probably would.
I don't see how you couldn't.
Really? I do.
Well, I mean, you could just look at his recent performance and say he's not himself right now. I don't want to start him.
Yes, sure. But again, we had this conversation last time I was on the podcast, and I don't see what's gone wrong.
Do you remember?
I know the results are bad. I know that you said his slider doesn't have enough bite or whatever, but like, that's not enough for me to sit a guy with this track record.
But do you remember what you said when we asked, are you going to sit him at Boston? And it was actually quite funny. You were like, you can't sit Luis Severino at Boston. I have Luis Severino, and let me check to make sure I'm not sitting him. And as you checked, you were like, no, I'm not. You can't see. You can't sit him at Boston.
Exactly.
There's a lot of issues here, but they keep saying they're not going to rest him. His velocity's fine. I thought his velocity was a little bit down last night, but maybe that was just in the first inning. But in the first inning, he was throwing like 95 miles per hour, which is down. And he's having first inning issues, but he is also the kind of pitcher who gets more velocity as the game goes on. All right, so you say there's nothing wrong. I think he might be tipping his pitches. They seem to be indicating that yesterday. But either way, Chris says start him. Heath, official word, start or sit against Toronto.
Well, the nice thing about this is that it's a Saturday start. If you're in a daily league, you're making this decision. You should look on Saturday and see where you're at in terms of wins and strikeouts and ERA and whip. I wouldn't call him a must start in that matchup. If I was in a situation where I felt like I had wins and strikeouts wrapped up and ERA and whip were close, I probably wouldn't.
Well, enough about Severino. Guys, let's talk about that amazing Braves outfielder and all that amazing stuff he's doing. And he, of course, is Nick Markakis. Set you up for that one. Did you know that Nick Markakis is the number 5 outfielder in points leagues and number 12 in Roto? How blown is your mind right now?
Oh, he's probably ranked that way pretty much all season. So on August 14th, it's not that surprising. If you had told me that on April 14th that he would still be that, my mind would be very blown.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, he's just, what do you make of it, Heath? He's having his career season. 507 slugging percentage, the first time he slugged over 400 in 6 years. Nick Markakis.
Yeah, and I mean, there are some things that he's just doing better, and there are some things that are just don't make a lot of sense, and guys just have years like this. And like as far as the 325 BABIP, he's got a – or the 325 batting average, he's got a 343 BABIP, which is the highest of his career since 2008. So you would expect his batting average to be elevated, and for a guy that doesn't strike out, when he has a really high BABIP, the batting average is going to go up with it. The home run to fly ball ratio, he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has. He still only has an 11% home run to fly ball ratio. That's much higher than he ever really has. I don't, it's weird. Like I'm not going to say, well, I think Nick Markakis is going to be a top 12 outfielder next year, but there's not a lot in the data that says anything other than he's been really good.
The weird thing is there's also not like a ton of signs that he's just dramatically improved or changed his game. Like his contact rate is a little higher than last year, but it's not dramatically so. He's not swinging at dramatically fewer pitches outside of the strike zone.
It's the quality of the contact he's making when he hits the ball. His line drive rate's 27%. Mm-hmm. That's absurdly good. His hard contact rate's 41%. Even in today's everybody's hard contact rate is up, that's still very, very good. Ground ball rate down to 42%, the lowest mark since 2012. He's always made contact at a very high rate. It's just now when he puts the bat on the ball, he's making a much higher quality of contact.
Yeah, I mean, look, next year, I guess I could buy a points league, you know, drafting Markakis, like, because he's a guy that I just never would have even drafted. I just never would have wanted him, but he's hit 38 doubles three straight years going into this year, 38 or 39. He's currently at 37. That's a really good number. His plate discipline's really good, so he's like a usable guy in a points league usually, but obviously this year he's fifth in points, 12th in roto. I don't know. I can't see myself.
Also a free agent this year, I believe, and you know, at the start of the season, we were hoping that he would be the one that the Braves benched for Acuna.
I just can't see myself really buying into him next year, but that's for next year. What about for this year? I mean, do you trust Markakis down the stretch? Would you rather have Markakis or Ronald Acuna down the stretch?
Oh, Acuna for sure.
I'd still rather have Acuna.
Well, let's talk
Let's talk about Acuna.
Okay, let's talk about Acuna. Here's your stat of the day. He is the fourth player in baseball history to hit leadoff homers in both games of a doubleheader. Two of the previous three are in the Hall of Fame. That's why he has a 66% chance to get in. Brady Anderson is not in the Hall of Fame, but Ricky Henderson and Harry Hooper are in. Harry Hooper. I've never heard of Harry Hooper. I admit.
I'm certain I've heard of him.
He played in like the 1910s.
Remember that show, Hanging with Mr. Hooper?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So Harry Hooper is in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. No, Acuna, since becoming the leadoff hitter, it's 23 games. He's batting .360 with 10 homers and 6 steals and 23 runs in 23 games. In the last 28 days, which is most of that time, Ronald Acuna is the number 3 hitter in points, number 2 in roto. Wow. Discuss.
He's been like Juan Soto. And I want to go to bat for Scott White just a little bit, because Scott was fighting his Braves fan brothers on Twitter last night about Soto still being better than Acuna. He is. But Acuna he came up really hot, and then he had a cold stretch. They put him in the leadoff spot, and he got hot again. I don't think he's quite as good as he's been over the last 23 days, and I don't think it's all related to the fact that he's hitting leadoff. But he's a top 20 outfielder.
He's been, since July 20th, in CBS Sports Roto Leagues, the number one player in fantasy since moving into the leadoff spot.
Wow.
And wow. Juan Soto has been really good. He's been the number 33 player. So, look, they're both awesome. Which one is better? Maybe Ronald Acuna's profile.
Juan Soto is better.
Maybe Ronald Acuna's profile is a little better for roto leagues, and Juan Soto's is better for head-to-head points leagues, and we just call it that.
Yeah, maybe because of the steals.
He's got six in 23 games, I think, as a leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
10 home runs. He's hitting .344. That's not going to continue because he's still striking out at like 27% clip. But that's not terrible. It's just Juan Soto's plate discipline is legit, right, like Joey Votto-esque.
So when you look at these guys, and we've talked about it, but let's talk about it again. I mean, who would you rather have in a dynasty league? Acuna or Soto or a guy like Anthony Rizzo?
Soto.
Yeah. I think he's like a year younger than Acuna, too.
Yeah, okay, and Rizzo
is... Yeah, about
is,
a year.
Rizzo's what, around 30?
He's got to be up there, yeah.
So would you rather have them or Jose Altuve?
I think you still have to go Altuve.
I'll still take Altuve.
Rizzo turned 29 6 days ago.
Oh, he's 29. Happy birthday, Anthony Rizzo. Would you rather have those hotshot rookies, Ronald Acuna, Juan Soto, or Bryce Harper?
Harper.
Yeah, yeah.
Say it.
But,
say it.
But, I mean, it's not like Harper's having a worse season than Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo was being drafted not that much later than Harper, so what's the gap there? Just age?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, probably. And upside. So, by the way, do you still have the list of where everybody ranks since July 20th?
I do.
Where's Harper?
Harper is the number 15 overall player, so like the number 9 hitter.
Oh,
just behind Cole Calhoun and Matt Chapman.
Wow, I'm actually surprised. I thought he'd be higher than that. Any other standouts that you guys want to talk about from yesterday?
So I want to take the opportunity. He had a 5-for-5 game, so I want to take the opportunity to talk about Nicholas Castellanos and just how weird he is.
You're
because
weird.
He has settled in as kind of like the good version of Corey Seager. Basically, over the last 3 seasons, he's been remarkably consistent. I don't think that's the perception we have of him, but, you know, like 827 OPS, 811, 832 over the last 3 seasons, between 272 and 291 batting average. And the batted ball data suggests that he should be one of the best hitters in baseball. You know, if you compare his batted ball data to like JD Martinez and even the plate discipline, they don't look that different, but the results are super off. And so that makes me wonder, does Castellanos have the big breakout that people were hoping to see this season? Does that still live within him?
Is the Detroit batted ball data still wrong?
I think there's something going on with the batted ball data around the league, and I've mentioned that a few times. People who know about that have said that it's not a part of the explanation, but I don't know. And then, yeah, there might just be batted ball data issues in Detroit, but it's interesting because he's been consistent, and yet there are reasons to buy into more than he's shown.
And I think Castellanos, it really seemed like he was having that breakout, but he's just been so cold. It was nice to see him go 5-for-5 with a home run yesterday, but his last month or so has been terrible. So I want to see just what he was before the All-Star break.
Before the All-Star break, he was at an 877 OPS.
That's pretty damn good. 15 homers in 94 games. He's probably never going to be like a massive home run hitter, right? But I don't actually. Why say that? I mean, he hits the ball hard enough. But yeah, 305, 15, 56 in his in the first half in 94 games.
And that's the thing is that like we've seen with Matt Carpenter. And obviously, Castellanos has been better than Carpenter was before the big breakout. But if you believe in these numbers, that's someone who's still a buy low candidate in, you know, this season if you're still making trades and, you know, potentially for Dynasty. I think it's an interesting case. It wouldn't surprise me if he had a 900 OPS next season. But it also...
How many years do those numbers have to show that?
Well, that's the thing is they've gotten better every year too. It's not like the numbers have just stayed static. He's got the underlying numbers, the ones that we assume or believe are the true display of talent, have gotten better. He looks like one of the best hitters in baseball.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's Castellanos. Heath, any standouts for you on Monday?
I mean, we should probably just mention Matt Carpenter again.
Okay, let's mention Matt Carpenter again. He's pretty good.
14 homers since the All-Star break, which is a lot.
Matt Carpenter, where he is currently the number 9 hitter in points leagues, number 12 in Roto. He's got 33 home runs. It's a career high. He had a 5.58 OPS, batted 140 in his first 35 games. He has since become, I don't know, maybe the best buy low candidate in fantasy baseball history. If you got him in game 36, because since that point in his last 79 games, Matt Carpenter, 32-year-old Matt Carpenter, has an 11.54 OPS, 30 home runs in 79 games. So, yeah, he's on a 60-homer pace since then, probably 61, something like that. When are you going to take Matt Carpenter in 2019?
63-homer pace. Wow. I would say I have been one of the biggest Matt Carpenter boosters on this podcast. I was boosting him before the breakout.
I don't know if that's true. We were all Matt Carpenter boosters besides Adam.
Not true. I did not say, you cannot tell me that I was not a Matt Carpenter. I will tell you specifically what I said, but you can continue.
Anyway.
Oh, no, this is important to me. I'm not going to let you sully
my... I'm not saying it like I was right. I just, like, I don't think I'm going to draft Matt Carpenter next year is where I'm going with this. Because he's going to be coming off the best season of his career by far. He's not showing any signs of slowing down, but even if he does, he's pretty clearly going to end up with an OPS north of 950. He's in 989 right now. I don't want to pay for a guy coming off a career year, especially a guy in his late 30s, especially a guy who's
early 30s,
especially a guy who's had injury issues that have derailed seasons in the past. I think we're probably going to see him sneak into like the second, third round range, and I think that's probably too much.
I don't know what my 2019 rankings are going to look like at this point, but I would guess I'm going to have Matt Carpenter as a late third, early fourth round type pick. And if he's there, then I'm going to take him. But I don't expect he will. I think Chris is right. He'll probably be... I mean, if he finishes the way he's been going, which I don't expect he will, then he's going to be a second round pick.
Yeah, okay, so let's unwrap a few things here. First of all, rest of season, we still got 40 games left, approximately. Rest of season, is Matt Carpenter a top 20 player or hitter?
In head-to-head, I would say yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you rather have Carpenter or Acuna rest of season?
Carpenter.
Yeah, I feel like you got to go Carpenter, right?
I think so, yeah.
I know you're not going to get the steals from him, but...
Well, he's been the number two player since Acuna's... was in the DL and leadoff spot, and his track record's obviously a lot longer.
And what I said about Carpenter obviously was wrong, is that I still believe that he was a good buy low candidate in a points league, but I didn't think he was a good categories player. I thought he was a borderline 5x5 categories player because he didn't stand out in batting average. He didn't stand out in home runs. He didn't steal any bases. What he was good at was like doubles, extra base hits, and plate discipline and on base percentage. So I thought that's who he was. I was obviously wrong about that, but please don't say that I was not saying to buy low on Carpenter. I just thought he was really a format specific player, and in like a standard 5x5 categories league or roto league, I thought he was more of like a number 15 first baseman, corner infield type player. But obviously, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I was right. I just, that's how I felt about him. And with that said, I do think it's justifiable to take him in the late second round of a points league next year, because he's really, really good in that format, even when he's bad, even when he's having a down year. All right, news and notes for you. The big news, we got a lot of it today. I forgot to mention who's coming on the show later. I'm sorry about that. So, you know, let me just let you know that we're regulating later. We haven't regulated in a while.
I don't know what you've selected for regulating, but I hope it's an email that's like a week old.
I'm not sure.
We got one of the best regulator.
Okay, I don't think I have it either, so I'm going to let you include it if you can.
I will include it. Yes.
All right. Good. All right now. Well, yeah, I know it's so good. Now on to more serious matters here. In all seriousness, we wish the best to Leonis Martin. Seems like he is on the path to recovery. He's recovering from a bacterial infection. Brian Dozier left yesterday's game with dizziness. Seth Roberts said that Dozier had an abnormal EKG. So this is obviously something that we need to keep an eye on here for Brian Dozier, and we're going to wish the best for him. We have more music to play, though, because I'd like to say a hearty welcome back to Robinson Cano. Mr. Cano, on behalf of Fantasy Baseball Today. Welcome
back. That was really good.
Thank you.
That was, man, that's why they gave you the big bucks.
Sure. Cano's back. He's eligible to return today. He's going to play some second, some third, some first. He's 87% owned. What are your expectations for Robinson Cano rest of season?
He's going to be Robinson Cano.
That doesn't. That's very not that helpful, Chris. Well.
I don't think.
They pay you the small bucks.
I think Robinson Cano is going to be himself. I think he's a good hitter. Not a ton of power at this point in his career, but I think he's going to hit right around 280. He's going to be useful, and I would expect they'll find a spot for him in the everyday lineup because, with the exception of Gene Segura, their infield stinks.
And
it's been really bad. Yeah. Ryan Healy has been awful. D. Gordon is having a pre-breakout D. Gordon season. Lowest walk rate, I think, since the 1920s. Yeah, there's room for him to play.
Mm-hmm. And Gordon's a little beat up right now.
Yeah.
Cano is also better in points than Roto, just like Carpenter. Not to the same extreme. But before his 80-game suspension, he was the sixth best second baseman in points, 11th in Roto. And last year he was, I think, like 8th in points and also 11th in Roto, something like that.
Yeah, I expect something in that range.
I will say, though, at this time of year, especially if you're in a points league and entering the playoffs, I mean, we have one of our leagues already in the playoffs and a couple others are just right around the corner. I would not feel confident inserting Robinson Cano into a standard points league lineup the first week or two that he's back.
I would need to see how much he's playing.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Trout is dealing with a family matter. He may not be available on Thursday when he's eligible to come off the DL. Carlos Martinez is going to pitch out of the bullpen when he returns. So can we drop Carlos Martinez?
I think so, yeah. He's not going to be the closer, I would guess. So I don't see what he's going to do for you.
Are you confident that he'll be in the rotation next year?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And by the way, we'll talk about bullpen later, but I think maybe you want to hang on to Kenley Jansen. There's even a better chance that he becomes a closer after yesterday's debacle. And Will Myers.
You mean Kenta Maeda?
Who did I say? Kenley Jansen?
Kenley Jansen.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Kenley Jansen did throw yesterday, but yeah, I meant Kenta Maeda.
There was a report yesterday that they're optimistic he can beat the 4 to 6 week timetable.
And Will Myers came back. He played third base yesterday, and the ball just found him. He had 8 assists and 1 put out yesterday. That's a busy day at third base. So they've got him. And is this a big deal if he gains third base eligibility, Will Myers?
No, I don't think third base is a worse position than first.
No. I mean, it's always helpful to have more eligibility.
He'll have triple eligibility, right?
First, outfield, and third.
Yeah.
So let's get to this email of the day number 2. Email of the day number 1 was way back when. It was about Luis Severino. But here's a quick one from Ben. Taylor Ward or Danny Jansen for catcher?
I'll go with Danny Jansen.
Taylor Ward's numbers are really interesting. Really impressive. He's had a big breakout at AA and AAA this season. Really good plate discipline, runs a lot. Really interesting profile for a catcher. I don't know. Never ran before this season, so I don't even know what's going on with him.
So let's talk about who these guys are. Danny Jansen batted 9th for the Blue Jays yesterday. He's up and going to play, it seems. And Ward is going to play 3rd for the Angels. Is that right? Or am I crazy?
Yeah, he hasn't really played catcher at all. He hasn't played catcher at all this season.
Right.
But he is catcher eligible.
So, yeah, he's catcher eligible. I think he's going to – I should have a decent opportunity to get some playing time for the Angels and great minor league numbers. So,
yeah, Ward looks like the more interesting profile of the two because of the stolen bases, because of the plate discipline. I'll go with him.
Heath, you said Jansen?
I'll say Jansen.
What's your level of excitement for these two? How would you compare them to, say, Austin Hedges, who's been on the most added list and has...
I'm not particularly excited about either of them for the rest of this season. Long term, I probably like them more than Hedges, but I'd rather have Hedges in my lineup right now.
I'm going to add Ward where I've been playing Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea.
Just see, you know, just to see if he can turn into something.
Yeah, Chirinos, by the way, needs to play more. Like, this kind of relieved. I don't get it. Chirinos, another home run yesterday. Also, these prospects. Tuki Toussaint, 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 4 strikeouts, 6 swinging strikes against the Miami Marlins. Sean Reed Foley for the Blue Jays. 3 runs in 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. He'll be at the Yankees this weekend if he makes another start. Do you guys know if Reed Foley or Toussaint? I know Toussaint was called up for a doubleheader, but what's the future look like for these two? Are they possibilities?
I don't think Tuki Toussaint is going to stay. Well, I'm pretty sure he was sent back down yesterday.
He was?
Yeah, Tuki Toussaint is a much more interesting prospect to me. He is someone that if he was in the rotation, I would like to have on my team and probably starting pretty regularly. I don't know if that happens for another couple weeks. Reed Foley, it was the Royals, and it wasn't that impressive anyway.
Can we talk about the ultimate homer move? Heath picked up a Royal named Heath. Like it doesn't get more. I mean, I guess I was destined.
And started him.
Oh, yeah?
We started him for the People League.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good for you. Heath Philmeyer is now on team.
Well, we had Team Kreath is hurting at pitcher right now.
Well,
just trying to limp into the playoffs.
Good luck, Heath Philmeyer. That's what happens in a 16-team league. Now, you know what Team Kreath should do? You should go to ZipRecruiter.com/strike, and you should hire a pitcher. And ZipRecruiter is going to make that process so easy for you. They'll go out and find the pitchers that fit your needs. But actually, let's talk seriously about ZipRecruiter. First of all, big thank you to ZipRecruiter for sponsoring our show. Hiring can be very challenging. I'm sure a lot of you people out there know that. Maybe you're not hiring right now, but eventually you will need some people for your business. Big business, small business, medium size, it does not matter. Use ZipRecruiter and go to ZipRecruiter.com/strike to try it for free. 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. They don't stop there, though. This is what separates ZipRecruiter from the rest. They scan thousands of resumes, find the people with the right experience, and invite them to apply to your job. So as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And that is why ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. People, if you need to make a hire, you need to use ZipRecruiter and go to ZipRecruiter.com/strike for free. You can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/strike. ZipRecruiter.com/strike. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/strike. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Back to baseball. Actually, I do want to get to just a few more notes. CeCe Sabathia is on the DL. Could be a short stay. Danny Duffy's on the DL. Kenley Jansen, again, we said he could beat his timetable. Brandon Crawford left after taking a knee to the head. Adrian Beltre left with a hamstring injury, the same one that's put him on the DL twice this season. So that is a tough break for Beltre, and we hope he gets back, but would not be surprised if it's an extended absence. Gary Sanchez still looking at a late August or early September return. And I might be jumping the gun with Beltre. I actually don't know what the timetable is. Just third time injuring the hamstring. It's just a guess, and, you know, you see where I'm going with that. Any interesting bullpen developments for you guys yesterday? Bullpens?
I have nothing to add
okay.
Right now.
I'm not going to force you.
I'm sorry.
Be yourself. But Norris Blue say if he'd been pitching well, I'm sure he's still the closer. Coda Glover came in a tie game in the ninth inning, gave up a walk-off homer. The Nationals' bullpen is a mess. They desperately need Herrera or Doolittle back. Blake Parker pitched in a 6-2 game. They were up 6-2, non-save situation. He gave up a home run. Scott Alexander was dreadful. He's 36% owned. He's really just not having that good of a year, but they don't have a lot of options in the Dodgers bullpen. Blew a game for Kershaw, who pitched great. And that's why I think Maeda has a shot at getting saves. Good stuff, though. Jose Leclerc, Willie Peralta, and Robert Gazelman got saves. How would you rank Leclerc, Peralta, Gazelman?
I think you did. Because Leclerc's the only one that I really have a lot of interest in. Peralta and Gesellman, both kind of closers on bad teams, but I think Peralta gets a higher percentage of those save chances than Gesellman.
Yeah, I think they're all sort of similar-ish. Maybe Leclerc's a little better, but I have more confidence in him getting the next 5 saves for his team.
All right, let's look at the trust-o-meter. 0 to 10 on the trust-o-meter. Now, I already know that Heath is not really going to want to play along, but I'm going to make him.
What do you mean?
You're going to say, if I start a guy, I start a guy. It doesn't matter how much I trust him.
No, I am O-meter man. I will give you numbers. Chris is going to give you the long-winded explanation with no number.
Doesn't sound like me at all.
I have to get the clip of Dumb and Dumber. I've been meaning to do this. You know, I'll see if I can do it on YouTube and just use it. But in the meantime, I'll do that while you guys deliberate. Okay, how much do you trust them when you start them? Because these guys get started. But you put them in your lineup. They're pitching tonight. How much do you trust them? 0 to 10. Madison Bumgarner.
10.
100.
Mike Foltynewicz.
4.
6.
You guys are not deliberating. By the way, would you want to trade, if you still could make a trade, what do you think about Bumgarner? Do you see a reason to try to sell high with his 2.71 ERA, 3.70 FIP?
Can I?
This has nothing to do with the question you just asked.
No, it does. I heard Clayton Kershaw when you said Madison Bumgarner. That's on me. I thought it was the playoffs.
that was
backwards.
Playoffs.
That's not how that works. I'll change my 100 to an 8 for Madison Bumgarner.
So what do you think? And
I have not necessarily concerns. Trying to sell him, though.
Yeah, there are reasons to be concerned, I guess. I mean, he still goes out and gives you a good start every time out, but the walk's up, the strikeout's down. Looks like the kind of guy that we'd be worried about if he were a Madison Bumgarner, right?
And even before, we've talked about it, even before the injury last year and then after the injury, he looked like a diminished pitcher. Mm-hmm. He's had a FIP in the high threes two straight years now.
And for God's sake, just give me the damn number!
That's it.
But I did.
Yeah, but we already gave you.
I know.
You could have saved it for just a moment ago. The thing with Mad Bum, because I do think there's reason to be concerned about him being a top five or top 10, maybe even starting pitcher. But the strikeouts are down since the start of last year. He has almost a full season worth of starts over the last 2 years, 30 starts, 190.2 innings. So he's still doing good on a per start basis for innings. He has a 3.07 ERA with a 3.85 FIP. 1.16 whip. The strikeouts may not come back. I still think he's a very solid number two starter, and I don't think you can get anything close to more than that for him right now.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe you can get a hitter that's better than him. Not I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know like what the ranking is. Low end number two sounds all right to me because I do think he'll prevent runs and base runners pretty well.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to back to the trustometer. You said 4 or 5 for Foltynewicz, I believe. Andrew Heaney, 2 runs in 7 1/3 at San Diego yesterday. Strikeouts are down for Heaney. 32 strikeouts over 38 2/3 in his last 6 starts. He'll be at Texas this weekend. Trustometer on Heaney.
4.
Yeah, and this is going to expose a little bit of my Foltynewicz doubt, but I'm going to go 1 higher than I did on him. I'll say 5.
Perfect opportunity, Adam, and you missed it.
No, it wasn't quite.
Come on.
It wasn't lingering enough. Marco Gonzalez.
I'll give him a 4.
Yeah, I know he wasn't great yesterday. Has he struggled lately?
2 starts in a row. Pretty damn bad. And I thought it was all about the park factor, even though he's a ground ball pitcher, not a fly ball pitcher, but he's been so good at home. He's been good at pitcher's parks. He's been really bad at hitter's parks, and he sucked yesterday at Oakland. 4 runs on 8 hits in 5 innings.
Yeah, I guess I have to go with a 3 for him just because Heaney was a 4, and I don't think he's as good as Heaney.
We don't trust these guys very much, and they're all owned and started in most leagues. How about Sean Manaea?
Well, most of them are 2-start pitchers this week.
That is true.
If not all of them. Right. So if you're asking me if I trust these guys in a 2-start week, they'd all be 10s, except for maybe Folty. I don't get Sean Manaea at all. I don't understand how he has a 3.44 ERA with a 6.05 K per 9 and a 44% ground ball rate.
God sakes, just give me the damn number!
I don't get it at all. So, listen, he's been good. If he was on my team, I'd probably just keep starting him, but I wouldn't call it trust. I'll give him a 4.
It's weird because he gets a lot of swing strikes. But I'll say 2. I trust him the least of anybody in this group.
I mean, it's pretty
I'm pretty much only starting him in two start weeks or with good matchups.
Okay, so when none of Fulton, Evich, Heaney, Marco Gonzalez, or Sean Manaea get more than higher than a five on the trust over.
Hey, whoa. Okay, Fulty a six,
oh,
sir.
A six. It's a statement about how many trustworthy starting pitchers there actually are. Because all of these guys, I mean, just look at the raw numbers, have been pretty solid, if not better than that. I mean, Fulton Evich's been great this year. You know what I mean? It's like, Go ahead.
The Fulty thing might just be unfair. We should probably trust him more than we do. He's been awesome.
I'm moving up my rankings.
Tons of strikeouts.
He's going to get in the top 50.
Above average. He should be higher than that, I think. You know, you look at what he's done this year and the improvements that he's made. I would probably rather start Madison Bumgarner, but it might depend on the matchup. That's not a guarantee.
Wow.
To get Scott White on you, but he's kind of the reverse of Sean Manaea.
Well, yeah, no, it's really interesting. He has basically the same swinging strike rate as Sean Manaea. They're both 10 point. I think Manaea is like 10.2% and Fulty's 10.4%. But Fulty does have a lower contact percentage, so he induces more swings and misses when he gets swings. But it's just like 28% strikeout rate, close to average control, which has been, you know, an issue for him at times in his career. He's improved his ground ball rate. Like, he has a 286 ERA and a 353 FIP and a 377 Sierra. Like, all of that points to him being at least an above average pitcher. I don't think there are times when I'm going to sit Fulty. I don't quite understand it, but the track record is what it is.
So, in fantasy baseball, it's just there's such a difference between the great pitchers and then everyone else. And there's such a huge tier of pitchers, right? Like, all of these pitchers are basically in the same tier. You know who my favorite is? At least it was Heaney.
I mean, Mad Bum's the clear favorite.
Oh, no, forgetting about him. Yeah. Fulton, Evich, Heaney, Marco Gonzalez, and Manaea. Heaney was the one I trusted the most. Strikeouts are down. And I don't know if he's wearing down. It's a big innings boost from what he's had in recent seasons.
I mean, it's been like four seasons since he's thrown this much,
right? Yeah, something like that. So you got to do whatever you can, like to pack. You can't do it now, really, but to package these guys and try to get, you know, one really reliable pitcher.
I do have Heaney ranked the highest of this group. Fulty's right there with him. And Manaea and Marco are behind.
It's also a question of like, what does the word trust mean? Because like,
oh no,
I'm looking through the rankings, and I think it's an interesting question, because I think I can get to number 17 before looking at Scott's rankings at least.
Is that because Jose Barrios is 18th?
Right. Like, can you trust? But no. But that's not my anti Jose Barrios thing. Although Jameson Taillon is better. What does the word trust mean? If it applies to Jose Barrios, who's been as inconsistent as any good pitcher in baseball this season.
I think what it means is,
like, I'm not sitting him.
Right. You know that there may be a bad game. Like David Price. I trust David Price. He's going to have bad outings, but I still trust him. Mike Clevinger was pretty garbage last night, despite the results and getting the stupid win. But I trust Mike Clevinger.
Yeah, me too. I was going to put him on the trust-o-meter. I forgot, but Clevinger would be second on the list behind Bumgarner, right?
Yeah, I guess on Heath's, like, I'm looking, I think I get to number 26 before I start thinking about sitting guys.
That's Robbie Ray?
Yeah, like Miles Michaelis, I'm probably just starting. I'm probably not, if I don't have him on any of my teams, whoops. But if I did, I think at this point there's no opponent where I'm looking at it and saying, well, I think I probably need to sit him.
Right.
Maybe at Coors.
Yeah, at Colorado, whatever. At
or
Boston.
Maybe like if they go to Boston. But Robbie Ray, I'm thinking about sitting him against the 15th worst offense. That's where
the problem with Robbie Ray is. His is not dependent on who he's facing.
Sure.
At all.
Yeah. And the same with Nick Pivetta. The same with Zach Godley. That's the range where I think there are probably 25-ish pitchers who I'm not sitting.
At this point, I fully trust Godley, you know, for better or worse. And,
for now.
And Taillon as well.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm starting him. By the way, I would characterize trust as a fiduciary relationship in one, which one person holds the title to property for the benefit of another. That's just, you know.
What about blind trust? Who do you have blind trust? Like four pitchers?
Blind trust? No, it's got to be more than that. Blind trust in Scherzer, Sale, Verlander, Kershaw, Kluber, Kluber? DeGrom, Cole, Nolan Bauer.
Eight
or nine pitchers.
And Greinke and Carlos Carrasco.
I do not have blind trust in Greinke.
So Berríos is when you get to the Berríos is the blind trust.
No, mine is now Syndergaard at 12. I blind trust him. I don't blind trust Severino.
I don't blind trust Greinke on the road. I blind trust him at
home.
This
is super helpful.
Yeah, this is great. Okay, moving on. This is a light show today. Trending up. These hitters are trending up. Give me your quick thoughts. I have made the worst trade I've ever made in my life. Mitch Haniger for Kenta Maeda in a league that doesn't have saves as a category, by the way. So Haniger, since I traded him, became the leadoff hitter. He's batting .545 with one home run and six doubles in five games as a leadoff hitter. Miguel Andujar has been red hot. He homered again yesterday. Miguel Andujar has only 4 weeks this year with more than 17 fantasy points, but all four of those weeks have been just monstrous weeks. Jose Martinez has been very good, 11 for his last 20 with a home run and a double. And then deeper leagues. Oh, Michael Conforto. Michael Conforto's been good. Of course, I dropped him. 6 for 17 with two home runs in his last five games and a double. Devin Travis has been pretty good lately. And Brad Keller had a nice start yesterday. And he's at the White Sox this weekend, 23% owned. Haniger, Andujar, Jose Martinez, Michael Conforto, Devin Travis. They're trending up. And what do we think about any or all of them?
It's good to hear that Devin Travis is back in the majors. I wasn't aware.
Sure is.
I never really got too down on Mitch Haniger. So I'm glad that he's performing and having a hot streak right now. But he is a top 30 outfielder for sure and maybe top 25. And Duhar is really interesting to me, mostly because he makes me think of a song from high school that was very, very, I don't know any of the words to it. It was like just screaming sounds that I never knew the actual words.
What?
And you guys know what song I'm talking about.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't. What I'm thinking of is like, Andujar. Ba-na-na, ba-na-na,
no, I could make the sounds, but they won't be the right words because I've never known the words.
I have no idea.
Well,
what you're
somebody,
like, you have to.
Oh, Duhast.
Duhast.
Duhast Mish. Yeah, that's Rammstein.
Rammstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Andujar, yeah, he might win Rookie of the Year, by the way. And who's gonna win it? Oh,
Torres?
Please tell me. Oh, is he? Because look at their numbers. Torres has been garbage lately. He's had a DL stint. He's had less time up than Miguel Andujar. Tell me, make fun of me all you want. Tell me Andujar might not win.
No one made fun of you.
Oh, please. I heard the snickering.
I giggled.
You know what Du hast mich means in German in that song?
I would assume Rookie of the Year.
It means you hate. You hate me. And that's how I feel. You guys Rammstein me. Yeah, he's interesting. He doesn't really do anything except for like hit home runs and doubles, but
do you know who leads American League rookies in
that
war?
Is shocking.
No, I don't.
Shohei Ohtani.
Joey Wendell leads all hitters.
All right. Anyway, I don't.
Miguel Andujar second.
I don't fully trust Miguel Andujar. Do you?
I don't yet.
No.
By the way, I'm only like 50% sure that's what Du hast mich translates to. That's just what I heard in high school. Jose Martinez. Does he deserve to be 91% owned?
He has started like 9 games in a row, right?
That's the thing, is like if he's playing every day, then absolutely.
So part of it is they had a DH, but also I think the FAM trade opened up outfield opportunities.
Well, the FAM trade and then the Fowler injury and then the Tyler O'Neill injury.
Sure. Okay.
Although
Tyler
O'Neill, I think, is expected back in the next couple of days.
Okay, that's Jose Martinez. He deserves to be owned. How about Devin Travis? Any interest there? 7% owned. Last 14 days.
He's under-owned.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like, he had that stretch in his rookie year that even he didn't believe in. I don't think you should expect anything like that, but he should be at least 20-25% owned.
And Michael Conforto, 72% owned.
I think he's under-owned.
Just going to skip over the Royal. Brad Keller might be the rookie.
I was going to do the pitcher last. Brad Keller, 23% owned.
Maybe under-owned.
He's under-owned because of his SPARP eligibility.
And it was a two-star week, I assume, but...
Yeah, no, Scott liked him a lot. Not a lot. Scott liked him amongst the low-owned guys in two-star pitchers, and so far off to a good start. Got a win yesterday, had a very good start. Against the, he doesn't strike anybody yet. Great ground ball pitcher. I don't think anybody's starting him next week against Cleveland. But at the White Sox this weekend in a daily league, Brad Keller could help. Trending down, and Chris, if you wouldn't mind, maybe you could look up what Duhasmish means. I'd like to know. Trending down, do these guys deserve to be owned in 90% of leagues? Matt Olson and Matt Kemp.
Oh, Matt Olson just drives me crazy because I'm going to say no, and then he's going to have a week where he hits six home runs. He's just the type of player that you're not going to get even production from, and so there's going to be frustrating times like this. He's probably a little bit over-owned, though.
Maybe this is stupid. If you're, like, in second place in a roto league, and there's no point in finishing second, and you just need to finish... No, let's say you're in fourth or whatever. You just need this random guy who could get hot and have a 15-homer month or something. That's a lot. 12-homer month. Matt Olson, to me, seems like a guy that's super cheap.
For
sure. That you could pursue.
Yeah, but if you're in first place by, like, 25 points, and you're just trying to hold on and hope you didn't jinx yourself, this isn't the guy you'd want to start.
Okay. Matt Kemp is... way over-owned. He has sat four of the last eight games. He's been terrible since the All-Star break. Benching him, since he's such a bad defender, benching him seems like the way to solve the logjam for the Dodgers. Now, if Dozier's out, the logjam kind of clears up a little bit, but Kemp at 90%, guys, seems high to me.
Yeah, they've got like 10 or 11 players right now they should be playing over Matt Kemp.
Steven Piscotty, 60% owned. Since the All-Star break, he's batting .222 with three home runs. That was before yesterday when he went 0-for-3. So he is slugging .281 in August, again, before yesterday. Steven Piscotty, 60% owned. Should we give up or stick around?
I think it's fine to drop him.
I probably would not drop him in a five outfielder league.
There are probably some leagues where Steven Piscotty is owned and Michael Conforto is not. Rectify that. But, you know, it doesn't mean he's a must drop.
All right, what's it mean?
Duhast, I'm looking at a translation on genius.com. Mm-hmm. I believe it's you have me. You have.
Interesting. Well, I don't feel that way about you guys. I liked it better when it was you hate me. All right, emails. Quick.
And I've got you got me.
You got me. Oh, all right.
I mean, same.
Changes the song.
Same thing.
Pat from Canada. Can Ray Searidge fix Chris Archer? Feel free to speculate wildly.
I think maybe the answer is that we shouldn't put quite as much trust in these pitching gurus as we do, because they work with some types of pitchers and not with others. Like, we've seen Gerrit Cole become a much better pitcher since leaving Pittsburgh.
And Charlie Morton. In fact,
right.
I feel like the Padres have completely gone 360, or the Pirates, rather, 360 from a team that you wanted a pitcher to go to a team you don't.
I think it depends on the pitcher.
Counterpoint.
Don't they want you to pitch to contact? Isn't that their thing?
They like the fastball.
They want fastballs. And they want low fastballs, and low fastballs tend to be the fastballs that... Tyler Glasnow has actually talked about this since leaving Tampa, is that he wanted to pitch up in the zone. The Rays are a team that wants to pitch up in the zone. That's where he feels like he's most effective, and the Pirates wanted him to pitch down in the zone.
And like, looking at Fangraph's pitch values, which certainly aren't everything, Chris Archer's fastball has had a negative pitch value each of the last 3 years.
But that could be a result. You know, we know what the issue with Chris Archer has been, which has been home runs. That could be the result of him throwing too many fastballs up in the zone. Maybe he's going for swings and misses, and that's leading to, you know, maybe that was the issue. It's possible that Ray Searidge will fix him.
That's what I was gonna say. My counterpoint would be, anytime you have a pitcher that you think is very, very talented and underperforming that talent and goes to a new team, there is a chance, regardless of whether it's Ray Searidge or whoever else, that just doing something very different, some small philosophical change, can unlock that talent, like what we saw happen with Gerrit Cole.
Well, Archer, I don't think he has enough of an arsenal, personally. But also, I think it's a good thing that he's with Pirates. Forget about Ray Searidge. He has been terrible against the AL East. He sucks at Yankee Stadium. He sucks at Camden Yards. He sucks at Fenway Park. I'm not quite sure about the Rogers Center. This is a good thing for
Chris
Archer.
Appear to be throwing a sinker since getting to Pittsburgh.
He needs a changeup. It's just not good enough. He's a better changeup. This is from Corey in Rhode Island. Hey, Jackie, Andrew, and Mookie. Red Sox outfielders.
Yeah.
I need a Votto replacement. I'm in the playoffs right now. Looking at these first baseman or third baseman, I can switch Gallo to first. Josh Bell, Ryan Braun, Steve Pierce, Camargo, Flores, Jerko. Would you replace Votto with any of those guys? Bell,
well,
Braun, Pierce?
Votto's not expected back in the lineup for the next couple of days, right?
I don't know. I didn't know that. I apologize.
I could be wrong. You would know better than I would.
No. not this version of me.
No, okay, no. He's playing. He was missing time last week.
But he's not healthy.
He is back. I did know that. I thought I missed something.
I think Ryan Braun's the obvious answer here. He's been hitting really well since the All-Star break. You talk about someone who's going to be in and out of the lineup, but I think he's the best hitter of this group.
And to clear up the Joey Votto mess, he did come back. He was removed in the sixth inning last night due to an apparent injury.
Wonderful. This is an email from Nolan. I'm looking to... he says, hey, Matt, Will, Evan, and Justin. Will with one L, like Myers. Matt, Will, Evan, and Justin. Are those like...
Those are third basemen.
Okay. I'm looking to grab a starting pitcher for the stretch run. Who do you like most between Ryu, Glasnow, Stroman, Gausman, Boyd, Weaver, Gibson, Lucchesi? Ryu, Glasnow, Stroman, Gausman, Boyd, Weaver, Gibson, Lucchesi.
I like Glasnow's upside the best. I think chances are in a points league, Stroman is the best.
I think Glasnow and Gausman would be the two that I would go with.
What about Gibson?
What's that?
Gibson, what about him? Kyle Gibson.
Yeah.
He'll be right there with Stroman, I think.
I think the other two have more upside. I think Gibson's more of a mid to high threes ERA guy. You're hoping that Gausman can become what he was in the second half of 2016. I don't know if you guys talked about this yesterday, but I mentioned it in the waiver wire column.
We did.
He has lowered his arm slot.
No, we did not talk
since
about
getting to Atlanta. Over the last couple of years, his arm slot had gone up, and it's back down to where it was in the 2016 range. Now, it's Kevin Gausman. He had a bad start with the Braves. He had a good start with the Braves. That sounds like Kevin Gausman. But he was really good in 2016. Overall and in the second half, he was really, really good. He's throwing a splitter a lot more in the two starts with Atlanta. I think he has the most upside besides Tyler Glasnow.
All righty. Let's go to the matchups and then do the regulation. Yoelis Chacin at Jose Quintana.
I don't think I can start Chacin against the Cubs.
I am starting Quintana.
Yeah.
Why?
Has the Brewers' offense fallen apart lately?
He gave up five runs at the Royals last time out.
The Royals are good.
Actually, I mean, the truth is Quintana has been mostly good for his last six. I don't think he's an automatic. Okay, fine. Start Quintana, sit Chacin. Jalen Beeks at J-Hap.
I want to see Jalen Beeks, but I don't think I can start him.
Start J-Hap.
Yeah.
Start him. Rick Porcello at Nick Pivetta.
Start him. Porcello.
Start him both.
I can't trust Pivetta against the Red Sox.
Jason Vargas at Andrew Cashner.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no.
Corey Kluber at Sal Romano. Kluber.
Start Corey Kluber.
No Giolito. No Blaine Hardy. Trevor Richards at Anibal Sanchez. Please don't say Trevor Richards is interesting. Just say start or sit.
No, thank you.
Trevor Richards is interesting, but I'll sit him.
What about Anibal?
Oh, yeah, definitely start him.
Yeah. Corbin at Gallardo. Yes, Corbin, no Gallardo. Armand Marquez at Justin Verlander.
Start both.
Jameson Taillon at Jake Odorizzi. Just Taillon.
Start Taillon.
Gio Gonzalez at John Gant. Nah, not for me.
I don't think I would.
Yeah, this early in the week, I'd have a hard time trusting Gio, but I could understand if you did.
Lucky Ryan Barucki or Heath Fillmyer?
Well, I mean, if you can get Heath Fillmyer on your team, go get him.
I think you start Barucki.
I'm starting Barucki. Paxton, yes. Mike Fiers against the Mariners.
No, thank you.
Jaime Barria against Brett Kennedy.
I'm fine starting Barria.
I know, yep. Heath is. Andrew Suarez at Alex Wood.
I'll start Wood.
Yep.
Yeah, well. Super loud intro.
Oh, yeah.
Just blew everybody's ear out. It's my bad. Let's regulate. Dom in Hempstead, Maryland. I am the commissioner of a long time, 10-team, 5x5 NFL. Hold on. There we go. All right. I'm the commissioner of a long time, 10-team, 5x5 NL Auction Keeper League. It's a roto league. Our transactions are primarily waivers. We use FAB to bid only on American League players going to the National League. The amount bid for each player also represents the salary for that player. For any successful bids over $24, the team must either keep that player for next year at that salary or release him prior to the draft and take a penalty, blah, blah, blah. All right. Since we had already completed some bids last week, I confirmed with each team the amount of FAB they had left prior to the bid. Three bids were received for Jonathan Scope. The high bid was $55, followed by bids of $24 and $5. It turns out that the team that bid $55 only had $46 left because they had won a bid in a previous week. Since the $46 would have still been the high bid, should I give that team Scope for $46? Should I go to the team with the second highest bid? Should that guy be disqualified because he exceeded his budget? What would you do? The guy only had $46 left. He bid $55. What do you do?
I think, first of all, you should leave the music playing under this. I don't know why you don't. And I think you either give him the $46 player, but Scope is a $55 player for next year's cap.
Oh.
Or he can't have the player.
There's no either or with the regulators. Mount up. A $55 bid when you only have $46 available is an illegal bid. Whoever bid $24 gets Jonathan Scope.
Love
over,
it. Regulated.
You need an overdraft fee.
This is from Brian, 10-team keeper league. Do you recommend changing the divisions year to year or always keeping them the same?
I don't think there should be divisions.
But if you're going to have divisions, I would keep them the same.
I agree. All right, this is from Mikey in Connecticut. Our league is an auction keeper league that allows for 10 players to be kept. We allow for a limited amount of draft money to be traded. Neither owner in this deal had been eliminated from playoff contention at the time of the deal. All right, here's the problem. Owner A offered Shohei Ohtani with two other players and draft money. In return, he would get Sale and two other players from Owner B. The straight-up deal would have been fine, but Owner B would not have accepted it. Owner A offered this stipulation. At season's end, we swap Sale and Ohtani back to each other, basically a loan for the rest of the season. Some think it's collusion. Some think it's fine. What say the fantasy regulators?
I don't believe in loans in fantasy baseball. I believe loans are a form of collusion.
I think it's very interesting to do a European soccer style loan system, but until you do, this is collusion. It's obviously collusion.
Regulated. Heath, what's the last one?
Best regulator email maybe we've ever gotten. And this is from Richard in San Francisco. My dad plays in a points league that rewards a few defensive statistics. Outfield assists, caught stealing, and double plays. Double plays are worth 1 point, the same as an RBI. The rules are structured to reward second base, shortstop, and third baseman who start slash turn a double play. The first baseman does not receive credit. However, my dad realized a few years back the system only withholds the double play credit if you're rostered at first base, meaning if you roster a first baseman in the outfield or at third base or anywhere else, He gets those points for catching the end of a double play. No one else has realized this. And my dad has basically taken a draft strategy. I'm now paraphrasing. Taken a draft strategy of drafting second baseman, shortstop, and first baseman and playing them at a variety of different positions. He argues that anyone could have discovered or exploited this bug, but in my mind, it's a blatant violation of the spirit of the rules. Beyond that, it's kind of lame for first baseman catching a throw to get points. What do you say? Is my dad a genius, or is he undermining the integrity of the league?
He's a genius, but now you stop it.
He is a genius. This guy's not in the league. His dad just told him about it.
The answer to the question is yes. He is a genius, and he's undermining the integrity of the league.
But don't go tell his league mates about it. Let him keep dominating this league until the dummies figure it out.
Gosh, hopefully one of the dummies listens. I have integrity here. I can't do that. I can't. I just feel like I've got to speak up. Maybe at the end of the season. But, screw it. Nah, I don't know. I'm on the fence. It should not be allowed.
The best part is he's been doing this for multiple years, and no one has figured out.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. All right, so what's the final verdict? Should he? It's fine that he's done it because he's not cheating, but it's obviously, you know, kind of shady. What should Dad do?
Dad, keep winning. He's won 2 years in a row. He's going for the three-peat this year. Get that championship.
Yeah, and then maybe in the off season, be like, hey guys, I don't know if you realize, but
no.
Never. Yeah, I'm with Chris. Be a good person. Don't be like Assassin's Creed. Be a good person. Do Hashmish. All right, we're out of here. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.
Yeah. Turn it off.
We're so hip on Fantasy Baseball Today.